Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Live Dharma Sunday. If you have called in to listen to this morning's broadcast, please note that all lines have been placed on mute to avoid background interference. If you are joining us from either the Bright Dawn Ning site or the Blog Talk Radio site, please note that it is not necessary to call in. If you're experiencing loss of audio or the Blog Talk Radio player is not working properly, please refresh your page and hit the play button once more. It may take a few moments for your browser to complete the buffering process. Once again, welcome to Live Dharma Sunday and enjoy the broadcast.
I'm going to, oh, you can't hear me. I'm going to have to call in again. Oops. Something happened. Am I okay now?
Oh, now it's good.
Oh, well, excuse me. There was some kind of technical difficulty on our that we don't know what, didn't know what to do about. And, but now I'm with you. Okay, welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday on this July 3rd. Reverend Koyo Kobose here. I'm glad you joined us. And good thing you're Buddhist in the sense of having good patience and understanding with all these technical difficulties. I wanted to mention that my garden is going good and vegetable garden around the perimeter of it, planted some sunflowers, and boy, they grow tall and uh, There's a reason they're called sunflowers. They turn their heads and follow the sun. I think botanists would call that kind of behavior in plants seeking the light phototropic. It's built into their nature that they will, you know, leaves will turn and their broadside to get the full impact of the sun's rays and so forth. And of course, you know that light or the sun is a universal primal symbol of wisdom, of compassion, of warmth, of life. And so, in a sense, we could say that the sun and sunlight is source of the Dharma. And we should always face the Dharma. We should face the teachings. In other words, we should be dharmatropic. That's the word that I coined. And whenever I see the sunflowers in the garden doing their thing, I think, well, I better do my thing too. Well, we have a guest. We're going to do her thing of giving the Dharma glimpse. And this is Wendy Shinyo Haylett Sensei, who lives in upstate New York. She's a Bright Dawn lay minister from the LM2 group. So without further ado, Wendy Shinyo Sensei.
Thank you, Reverend Coyle, and happy Interdependence Day, everyone. In honor of Interdependence Day, my friend Julie, a yoga teacher, posted this question on her studio's Facebook page this week. She said, what do you consider the definitive moment or event of independence in your own life? I immediately commented without one hesitation when I completely accepted my interdependence. I wasn't being coy or purposely trying to answer with a Zen-like paradox, but it popped out of me as I was thinking about an experience I had had a few years ago when in my first year of Bright Dawn training. It was an experience I refer to as my Buddhist born-again moment. The experience was initiated by a story Reverend Al Bloom shared with our class about... We got the feedback again.
Yeah.
Should I continue or... Oh, there it goes. Okay. Everybody there? Oh, is it me?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can still hear you.
Okay. The experience was initiated by a story Reverend Al Bloom shared with our class about a woodpecker felling a gigantic tree after but a few pecks. Feeling powerful, he thought, wow, I did that. But what he didn't know was that there was a tree crew sawing down the very tree he was pecking. Bloom Sensei used the story to illustrate the difference between self-power, jiriki, or tariki, other power. Hearing the story that night helped me finally grasp what had been what I considered a greased pig. I never could kind of get a hold of the concept of self-power versus other power. Just when I thought I understood it, I then decided that I didn't understand it at all. That was the greased pig experience I had with it. So then in that the evening of that class, after he shared the story, I had a rational, self-power type understanding. Then, a few days later, while meditating, I was overcome with a feeling of relief and complete trust, as if I had finally arrived somewhere. I was thinking about the woodpecker during my meditation, and I realized I was that woodpecker, and I had been completely unaware of the fact that there was always a crew helping me. I described the feeling as a moment of complete and utter relief, so much so that I began to cry, almost as if I had just realized that someone or something saved my very life. That cry was what I call my personal declaration of interdependence, the most freeing experience in my adult life. I have since come to see it with some hindsight, with a wider perspective, realizing that entering into the Bright Dawn training came on the heels of many years of prior study I had, being embroiled in the Vajrayana or Tibetan Buddhist tradition. I had been studying and practicing for years, and I had taken that path up in a typical achievement-oriented way, a way that I've done everything in my life. I was convinced that I could perfect myself and become a Buddha if I had just had enough commitment and practiced harder and harder. That the teachers I studied with and took teachings from seemed to indicate that that was in fact the case. So I thought, well, there hasn't been much in my life I hadn't been successful at if I really tried, so I must be capable of this. But I became disillusioned and depressed when I didn't see any results. I was still the same person I had always been. So at that moment, I resigned myself to the fact that I was a Vajrayana flunky and maybe even a Buddhist flunky. So at that point, I made the decision to enroll in Bright Dawn, thinking it was my last gasp effort in Buddhism. I thought if I enrolled in Bright Dawn training, I could see if there was another way than the way I had been trying what I thought unsuccessfully for many years. And there was another way. I finally learned what the Buddha taught. Now I see that one, if not the only most important foundation of Buddhist practice, is becoming aware of your inherent ignorance or the limitations of yourself. It is surprisingly freeing, as I found out, to realize that we are not really the masters of our destiny, because all the choices we make about the thoughts we will think, about the actions we will perform, are a product of a complex web of experiences, surroundings, relationships, which everyone else is a part. This is the Declaration of Interdependence. This declaration is stating that you do understand and actively accept your own ignorance. It is a deep and personal understanding of the second noble truth about the origin of suffering and the first of the Eightfold Path or right view. And it's also a seeming paradox that provides our ultimate freedom. When we give up, we find our freedom. It is the freedom Shinran and Honen discovered. This freedom is not won by ourselves through our own actions becoming a Buddha, but through an active acceptance that we aren't capable of doing much by ourselves at all, and that through trust in the Dharma and in the teachers that gave us the teachings and in the broader ability to trust in life and its web, we are always supported and given more than we were capable of ever giving back. In that humble yet active acceptance that Reverend Coyo points to as acceptance is transcendence, we are declaring our interdependence. Recognizing that we can't do it by ourselves, we stop struggling. Like rolling over on your back and floating, rather than continuing to tread water when you become tired of swimming. That ability to float, that buoyancy, is a gift from life itself. It's not something you could have created in yourself. It's also a gift from those before you that taught you you could float. So despite all our failures, we are taken care of. If we look at this interdependence with gratitude and humility, we automatically loosen our grip on self-grasping. We let the little self drop away and let all that we think we know become open to interpretation. No one to protect and nothing to defend. A freedom I've given the code name, the complete okayness of everything. So happy Interdependence Day, everyone. Namo Amida Butsu.
Thank you very much. And I am unmuted myself. When I hit the mute on my phone, then that sound stopped. So something about our interface with our phone and the system. I hope we'll keep our fingers crossed. Well, I thank Wendy Shinyo Sensei for a tremendous Dharma glimpse, chock full of so many insights, you know, coming from her life experiences. I was thinking about this holiday time, and I've always encouraged relating American holidays that we observe to the Dharma. We might as well piggyback on the occasion. And when we think about July 4th, I was thinking about there's so many famous historical sayings that are associated with the Revolutionary War, and at that time, you know, sayings, language, phrases, quotes are very powerful, and they surround us all the time and function in so many ways, you know, that we sometimes take for granted the power of language, or even if you want to put it as a slogan of poetry. For example, for the July 4th, what are some sayings that stirred people at the time that gave them inspiration, courage, and so forth? No taxation without representation. Don't tread on me. Give me liberty or give me death. Those are sort of cliche, banal sayings, perhaps now we're so familiar with them, but you can imagine that at the time, they had a tremendous power for the people that were the active players. And this is a very similar in spiritual realm where the teachings, maybe a particular teaching is phrased in a certain way, or we have our own what we call code phrases. Code meaning not that they're secret in any way, but their full meaning, the listener doesn't necessarily know the context to know the full impact of a phrase. And so that's why a phrase, unless you share some kind of experiences around it, you know, it doesn't have the impact. And sometimes you have to internalize a given phrase or come up with your own so that it has that kind of personal impact. I'm sure, just for example, listening to the Dharma Glimpse or introducing, you know, the lay ministers have introduced the phrase Interdependence Day. You know, that means a lot. Or just turning of that phrase to the personal declaration of interdependence and what that means. Or even within the Dharma Glimpse, you know, Grease Pig, or another way, where acceptance is transcendence. Or relax when you're in the water, you'll float, you know, or okayness. See, all of these things are just like, these phrases are like the tip of an iceberg. The tip of an iceberg is only one-tenth of the huge mass. Nine-tenths is under the surface. It's not readily seen, okay? But it's huge. In a sense, the tip of the iceberg could be seen, if you use this metaphor, as the individual or the self or the self-power. One's self-power is just the tip of the iceberg. And underneath is nine-tenths is the other power. It's all the interdependency that holds up our life. And I know that when we talk about freedom, there's all kinds of teachings that could be spun off from that one word, freedom. And enlightenment is often talked about in terms of liberation or freedom. And it behooves us to explore that word, freedom. There's always more to learn. There's always another way. We have to have the freedom to explore freedom. You know, sometimes, well, I really like the three prepositions that can follow the word freedom. It has been pointed out. In America, we talk about when the founders said, you know, they established freedom of religion. And then the atheists remind us freedom from religion, the importance of that. So freedom of, freedom from. And then in a religious context, we say freedom within a religion. Because a lot of times, many religions are sort of pro-Christian beds that, you know, I learned a new word I'm showing off here, pro-Christian. It's not someone who likes the edges of bread, but pro-Christian, if you look up at the dictionary, means pro-Christus was a highway bandit that in medieval times, I guess, and he had a quirk that when he burglarized the home and he would tie up the householder to the four posts of the bed, and if their limbs did not stretch and reach the posts of the bed, he would cut off their limbs so that he could tie their limbs to the posts of the bed. So, pro-Christian, the word came to mean forcing something into a fixed bed, in, like forcing the facts to fit a particular theory. So if we, sometimes religions try to force people into certain rigid rituals, beliefs, and there's no freedom within a religion. It's almost as though a religion exists to enslave people. And it shows a kind of a insecurity, I guess. And of course, it's rationalized by saying, well, we've got a people, it not only rationalized, but it doesn't give people credit. It says, oh, they have to be led. You know, they don't have the ability to do it themselves. So don't confuse them with options, with there's another way, or find your way, internalize your way. No, that's a, hey, just, I guess it's a variation of blind faith. Okay, faith is a loaded word in a lot of ways too, but in the bad sense of the word, in a pro-Christian sense of the word. Okay, people are different. People are different, unique, and yet they're trying to be forced into the same mold. For your own good, for your benefit, okay, do it this way, okay. It's been this way for generations of time, and so we know what's best, okay. We're doing it out of compassion and for your benefit. Well, in a sense, that it might have some kernel of truth, but there's a better way. You know, we're not. We shouldn't have to take away anything. We should always be adding something. And we don't have to say, "Oh, that the old ways are no good. We got the new ways. Throw away the old and take in the new." Not that. If the old ways work, fine. If they don't, then don't let them get in the way. You need some freedom within a religion, within a denomination, within an approach. because people are different, times change, the place, the context changes. That's the teaching and law of impermanence, constant change. Truth is changing, and we have to change with it, and religion has to change with it. The same truths in different bottles, if you will. Huh? Different ways to internalize the universal teachings. The different ways to express it. The different ways it could be manifested. And it's not saying, you don't have to go to the other extreme and say, like I mentioned, oh, throw away the old. I'm going to do it my way. Okay? No. That's why it's a very interesting dialectical interaction between the dichotomies, the extremes of a dichotomy of independence and interdependence. They're sort of two sides of the same fan, you know, that we use to fan ourselves in the heat. We look at one side, or the two sides of one hand, you know. We look at one side and say, oh, this is my palm and this is the back of my hand, and they both have their function in a way. Two sides of a coin, a head and a tail. You know, one door, one side says exit, one says entrance. I remember there was a minister who saw a fan. It was one of those Japanese round fans, not the type that you open up, but just a round fan with a stick on the end. And one side it was written in Japanese. His father had written it, who was also a minister in Japan. And one side said, if you don't do it, who will? And on the other side it said, if you didn't exist, the world wouldn't change much. And that dichotomy, that dualism, kind of puzzled him. He says, yeah, on the one hand, it says, hey, you know, self-importance. The other side says, hey, you know, you're just part of the whole universe. And how can he resolve this kind of seeming contradiction? And he thought about, he was preparing to do a, conduct a funeral, and he says, and he was thinking, I've got to do a good funeral, and I got to give a good Dharma talk and everything, and I've got to do it. I'm going to do it, you know. And then he thought about this two sides of the fan, and he said, well, I'm not really that important. I mean, I'm going to officiate this funeral, but supposing I got sick or something right now, they would work it out. They would find a substitute and so forth. Even a, then he said, he started playing with this, and he said, well, even a mother, I'm crucial to my young children, you know. But if something happened to the mother, the children would get adopted by relatives or something, and they would be raised. You know? The world would still keep going. And yet, at the same time, you can't have completely that kind of attitude of, well, I don't need to do anything, or you've got to have that self-effort. Self-power is not the same as self-effort. And the word other power, too, is loaded, right? I mean, the word other, that's why they say sometimes say absolute other power. You know? But interdependence, acknowledging one's roots, all the teachers, our lineage, our ancestors, all the causes and conditions, is indeed a tremendous liberating force in one's life. As we travel between the eternities. So, that's all for today's broadcast. And I will sign off with, have a very beautiful Interdependence Day. Thank you.